that great? It's like one of my favorite Kids in the Hall sketches where they're in some corporate setting and all of a sudden this boss comes out and he just screams, "Who's to blame?" And I just feel like that about Pete Buttigieg. Like,
hi, I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And I'm Maya Grantz.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
Today, guys, we are ruining Pete Buttigieg.
Sorry, Pete, but it's past time.
And we have brought back the great Caitlin Bird at Gotham Girl Blue, who so brilliantly took us through the problems with Bernie Sanders, the reason that we need to be done with Joe Biden. And we needed to bring her back to break down what is going on with this guy. Welcome, Caitlin. We've missed you.
I mean, I'm here to break down a white guy anytime.
Let's just get right into it. I feel like we're only talking about Pete Buttigieg because why are we still talking about Pete Buttigieg?
Yeah. There's no actual answer to that. Why are we talking about him? Why is he still in this race?
I mean, there's an answer, but like the one that we have for Trump and impeachment and why we're doing any of the stuff that we're doing, why we're even holding a primary when we should be holding a re-election campaign, is, you know, uncomfortable for people. The answer is he's a white guy and he's young. And that means that he's not like the other white guys. And that's basically it. It is like, what if we still get our white guy who's going to do all the things that we keep saying we want? And even though you guys keep saying, like, fuck no, we're saying, okay, but what if he were gay and young? And there you go. And it's like, there's a desire for someone to be, like, we've got a better version of white maleness. Like, do you though?
So what I find really interesting about that is that was the role that I thought that Beto was going to have. Like, he's the tall, handsome white guy. And I feel like both Beto and Buttigieg have a certain, like, vibrational relation. I'm sorry, I'm in California. To Obama's appeal, and that there's the sort of intellectual facing that they have, Beto much more in just the physique. He looks like white Obama. And then like Buttigieg was initially like talked about by Obama, that he has that kind of like, I am a scholar, I'm an intellectual. And I feel like there's certain kinds of appeal, and yet Buttigieg lasted and Beto didn't. And that is shocking to me. That is shocking to me.
That is quite interesting. I think both of them also have that quality of not really having had a big presence or any presence on the national stage prior to, for Buttigieg, this primary, and for Beto, obviously, the senatorial campaign. And people like that. People liked that about Obama. He felt fresh and new, and it gives you that change vibe that people are often looking for, because people are usually not happy with the status quo. So it's a really good balance of like, well, I'm learned and grounded, and yet I'm fresh and bringing change. They both kind of had that. I think for Beto, he was not as fresh and new because he was coming off the loss in the Senate race. And he just kind of squandered the momentum he had going on in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, like, let's be clear. I don't think any of us think we need the white guy. I think it's curious that Buttigieg is lasting. Like, he is the mayor of a small Indiana town who has never held a major elected or even national office. He is 38 years old. He is not qualified.
No.
How are we still, what is it about him that we are even still talking about him? Like, is going on?
I guess I always comes down to the fact that he he's very good at courting power. And that is a particular talent that not a lot of people have. And it sank some other campaigns. And for other ones, the fact that they don't court power is the key aspect of the campaign. And Pete Buttigieg just realized that he could run campaign as one of two things. He could run as an outsider, or as he could run as an insider. And what he promised was to be, he's going to be the inside man for many of the people who are unhappy with the direction that the country is taking at the highest levels of our country. But in terms of wealth and influence, but he's not going to fundamentally alter the structures of what's happening now. And he's explicitly said stuff like this. He's explicitly expressed the sentiment that, like, things don't really need to change that much. The problem is Trump is embodied by Trump, and the system will return to natural if Trump is removed.
Which is also a performance or something that Biden's been saying a lot. Biden's like, yes. Trump is an outlier. Trump right. is an outlier. That's clearly so important to him.
We need the return to normalcy, the return to the way things were before Trump, which was so great. Everybody yep. was civil and cared about the same ideals and all this fantasy stuff. And I do really think that Pete fulfills that, like he's offering that same message, but in a package that also doesn't have 30, 40 years of baggage.
Yeah. Right.
Like the, his elder opponent has. And also,
he doesn't shoot from the hip either.
Yeah, he doesn't have that problem of, like, you know,
which is a Joe problem.
A bunch of times.
Bernie's unpalatable, and Bernie's unpalatable for many, many reasons. But I just want to sneak in here that the main reason Bernie is unpalatable is because he's an asshole. You know, like, it's clear, he like assembled right? a staff of assholes. It's not a surprise. At this point, like, I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt on that. Like, he seems to be, like, in person, like, not a great person to hang around. And it's exhausting. And I'm sure that, like, other people would be like, we would work with you, but you're just so exhausting. that's a major reason that people are put off from him. But that's just me tossing that out there. And people just does not have that. You know, if you want to rank him against, like, the two white guys who are in the race with him and who he initially tried to take from the Bernie side, and like no one bit, and then he was like, okay, well, let me swing around, let me see if I can bite into this Biden space. And everyone was like, oh my god, thank god, you're gonna save us from Joe Biden. If you really want
right
someone's gonna do the things that Joe Biden would do, but younger and fresher and right. you know, with less,
and not Joe Biden
with less off the cuff racism. Just like, what if you could just instead of like more calculated racism.
And
Pete,
what then makes it interesting in terms of the calculated racism is that he is somehow surviving things that no other candidate will survive. Like having a bunch of black people and claiming that they have supported him and that being a lie, that there are like 200 people that they, 200 African-American like people who have various state Senate powers or various like... And claiming that they have endorsed his plan when that is a lie. It's a lie. It's not
what
even
a
like
pretentious name too. It sounds like something that someone would make up for a school project.
Totally.
It definitely sounds like the thing that he would have made up for, like, oh, let me submit this for my Rhodes scholarship or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
yes.
it was just like so demeaning in the sense of like, you know what, I'll think of a plan to help black people and I'll call it the Douglas plan. And I'm like,
And then
you didn't do any reading, did you?
And then lying about the endorsements. And also today it was revealed that he's like, I'm so transparent about all the people who've been giving me money. And big surprise, he is not. There are all of these high level donors, bundlers, that he's not included in his campaign. And it's wealth. It's pure wealth. And he is somehow like playing these games. He's going after Warren. He's playing dirty. A lot of his people seem like assholes too, by the way.
Yeah.
A lot of his like...
I mean, he's just and this is so funny because people are going to take it like, you know, Hillary got added to this, and there is a very strong element of misogyny. So I'm going to be aware that there is the lens and intersectionality of homophobia here. But he is so ambitious. Mm-hmm. He's 38. What about your life needs to get finished right now? Because the presidency is the last stop. There is no other thing to do once you've been president of the United States. So you're saying you're going to retire at 46 years old. That's what you're saying. What great ambition do you have to fulfill at this moment that you cannot do anything else with yourself?
I have to jump in. I agree with you both on this. And it feels like especially frustrating given the moment that we're in. It feels like there's like a venerable history of people using running for the presidency as an avenue to accomplish other things, to make a name for themselves on the national stage, to run for vice president, all kinds of things. But like now, do you have to do this now? We have a still very big field, even as people start dropping out. And we have an urgent need to settle on a candidate that we can all get behind, because nothing is more important than winning in November. So why you now here?
Right.
All of that said, because that is how I feel, I do feel like I have to bring up an alternate perspective, because I got in a pretty good argument with my dearest friend Guy Branum over this, because I've never cared for Pete Buttigieg, and I'm disturbed by the people who do seem to like him and the reasons they do seem to like him. And Guy's take on his running for president while appearing to be underqualified is, there's a few things I wanted to bring up. One being, there's not a precedent for working your way up to the presidency through, you know, state legislatures and governorships for an out gay man. It's just not there. So if he wants to move beyond mayor of small town, is Indiana? He's from Indiana, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. South Bend, Indiana. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, that's a small city. Like it does rank on
the
city's
enough. It's not a
level. Yeah, just outside the top 100 or something.
It may not be feasible for him as an out gay man to run for state legislature, run for governor. He could probably run for Congress, but who goes from the House to the presidency?
Beto thought he should. Sorry, tossing that out
working
there.
Out. Yeah.
I mean, well, so
it's not working out so great.
Here's the thing.
But
yeah.
Before we address that one, I also want to bring up the idea that this Guy brought up. Actually, no, just go.
Well, so sorry. Here's the thing that I feel about that. And I've actually spoken to people who like are academics at Notre Dame, who I was like, what the fuck is up with Pete? And they're like, let me tell you. And definitely in terms of state politics, they're like, there's no way he's going to be the senator of Indiana. Like, mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. He's gay. Indiana's Indiana. It's not going to happen.
Right.
However, I feel like there are two alternative personalities that I feel like are instructive here. One is Castro, is Julian Castro. First of all, he was the mayor of a much larger city, but he's a Latino candidate from Texas, which is rapidly changing, but it's still a red state. And he knows that he can't run for Senate. So what does he do? He ends up being the secretary of HUD, which puts him at the highest levels of national power and solving these national problems. So I feel like there are directions for that. There actually are. It is might be a little more creative, but there are ways that he could think about being involved at these bigger levels and getting a national, not just a national profile, but experience in solving these problems, like being in the fucking room to know how to do this.
And I think the other problem is that he also has run for higher office before and has not made it, which makes running for the presidency seem absurd in lieu of what difficulties he's had running for higher office. He tried to, he ran for head of DNC, that did not work. He ran for state treasurer, didn't work. You know, ultimately, like, if you are having that much kind of trouble getting elected at these lower levels, the answer is not, well, my level's just not big enough yet. I should try running the country. Like, okay, you can't run, you didn't successfully run for state treasurer. You can't, you came third in the DNC race. You don't have the organizing hustle right now to successfully convince voters across a nation against a propaganda machine. You like,
but how, like, do you become like secretary of HUD or a similar position going from mayor of South Bend, Indiana? Maybe the way you get noticed for a position like that is to make a name for himself on the national scene, you know, and be in consideration for such roles.
To be fair, a lot of people were using the Democratic primary for that, for just that purpose. Like, I'm going to get national attention in this moment, but it's like, it's time to stop. I feel like the momentum has gone too far and it's getting dangerous. And I feel like there's also the whole, like I want a woman to be president or vice president very badly. There's no part of me that thinks that Sarah Palin, as the mayor of Wasilla and then the governor of Alaska, was qualified. Like, I'm not going, and there's a certain kind of privilege that he plays into as specifically like Rhodes Scholar, Mr. Intellectual. Like, I don't look at that and go, yeah, but you have a plan. Like, I don't think that he, no more so did I look at like George W. Bush or like Sarah Palin and go, you're the, like, for W, like, you're the governor of a state that meets every other year. You're a governor of a state with like fewer people than like LA. And like, and, yeah, and you know who didn't run for president, who was thinking about it, speaking of LA, is Eric Garcetti, who is totally going to like do that and say, hey, LA is bigger than most of these states, I can talk about this. And he didn't. And I appreciated it greatly.
Yeah. Really depressed over here with Bill de Blasio leaving to go. Like, it was my rule always has to be in terms of politics, right? Like, Bill de Blasio left and he came to the race and New Yorkers didn't want him there. So, like, if you can't win over the people who know you best, you are not going to have a successful run to your next level. You have to be able to win over your near voters. And that's a problem that Pete Buttigieg has, to me, fundamentally. He's like, he's not going to win Indiana. He might win South Bend, but like, he doesn't even there. How many votes is that really in terms of deciding his state? What's his strategy going forward? It is Black people are not willing to get destroyed. So they're going to vote for me. And it's like, you can't play defensive like that. There are going to be people who turn out like me every single time because, you know, I care about this stuff. But there's a lot of people who are going to say, you know, no matter which way I go, I'm getting screwed. And they'll sit home because you just told them that you don't think that they're very important or valuable. So they know that no matter what, at least they know who their enemies are when those other people are running the government. With you, it's like all false. It's all false promises. You didn't need us to get elected, apparently. So you don't need us to be part of your administration. And the fact that he has this significant problem with Black voters and it's not sinking him should be alarming to like everyone. No one should be filtering anything that he says without noticing like Black people do not like this guy. They do not. Like, maybe it's homophobia, but maybe, you know, they didn't like Bernie Sanders either. Like, it probably wasn't the homophobia there. So, you know, and you could argue again, but like,
I think it's it's
you're talking about candidates that aren't really speaking to Black people at all.
Yeah.
They're not speaking to them. They're not speaking to the issues that are relevant. They're not listening to Black people. What they're saying is not reflecting that they're listening to Black people.
They're also not acknowledging what they don't know. And somebody who I think has been quite successful in acknowledging what she doesn't know is Elizabeth Warren. Like, where she's like, this is something where I'm going to sit here in the room and listen to you guys because I don't know. And it's like, very very refreshing. Like when she was at HBCU in Atlanta and they were shouting at her, and like Ayanna Pressley came in and she looked at, and some people were like, oh, she couldn't even handle it. And she was like, no, because this isn't, like, it isn't for me to tell these protesters to sit down. Like, I'm going to have Ayanna Pressley do it because she is a legitimate person to have this conversation. And I'm going to sort of hold hands with that and build coalition that way. And I feel like being able to acknowledge what you don't know, to admit your mistakes, like, Buttigieg has this profound arrogance that he can just figure it out. And it's like, that one of the things we were talking about, because you were also saying that Guy had mentioned that the way that he's being sometimes defined as hollow or frivolous is coded as gay language, like this refusal to see him as serious because he's gay. Yeah. And I feel like the refusal to see him as serious is because he's 38 and has never held a meaningful office. Like,
sure, but I think it's worth noting the number of double binds that he's in here. It's like he can't get elected to anything higher, but he is in Indiana and he's an out gay man. So we can't dismiss that that's a relevant factor. So he can't, you know, I'm not saying there's no other path for him, but I'm just trying to be, I'm trying to take into consideration the various limits that are circumscribing what he's able to do and who he's able to be that might not exist for other candidates.
But I think what's hard is as a woman to hear that like every woman candidate deforms herself. No out gay female mayor of a small city would ever be at this level. They would be laughed out of the fucking room.
And Kate Brown is out there in Oregon and no one had her on a short list. Okay?
Right.
Like, let's be clear here. There are statewide out female politicians, and they are not on shortlist for president. It's bizarre that this small town mayor is. But more than that, the fact that he doesn't have a path to statewide win is exactly the thing that precludes him from having a national one. Mm-hmm. If he cannot, he keeps saying, I can connect in Indiana. You cannot. You openly are running for president because you cannot. Therefore, what's your plan to win over all these Trump voters? Like, you still haven't articulated that, and you're just ignoring the elephant in the room, which is that if you could, you would have already done it. If you could do this thing, you would have done it, and we would be talking to the governor of Indiana.
The governor of Indiana or the senator of Indiana had Joe Donnelly, like, take that spot. Like,
forget it. Like, there's a danger in forgetting that Pete Buttigieg is an outsider in more than just having no experience. In being an out gay man, he has an outsider status. And it's easy to forget that because it's not visible. It's not immediately visible. And I do not want this conversation to go in a direction of some kind of like oppression Olympics and talk about like who's more of an outsider or what that means. It's more that we should be cognizant of the difference between someone whose outsider status is clearly visible and evident and someone who's is not, because he is still an outsider. He has this weird, he lives in this weird zone where he has this option to play down the thing that makes him different and scary to people, which gives him a better chance of succeeding. But then of course, makes him less sort of authentic, if you will. It's like, but it's it's one of those double binds. Like with Kamala, like if you're gonna fight for civil rights and be super progressive about it and be a Black woman, you're putting yourself in a pigeonhole where you are limiting your options. If you go in another direction and speak, I think Caitlin, you said it so well when we were talking about this. You said that Pete speaks through his privilege.
He lives at intersections, right, between his whiteness, his cis maleness, and his gayness, and we all live at our own relative intersections. And Pete has a tendency of speaking through his white cis male, his privileged identities more often than he speaks to his marginalized one. You know, when he starts saying, like, as a, he doesn't say necessarily very often as a gay man, or like, this kind of information is what I was getting as a gay man in these rooms, and that's why, like, I think about things this way. He overwhelmingly sounds pretty much like a lot of straight white men. Like, if you took out the quotes, could you, you wouldn't necessarily tell. And right, because exactly. When he's speaking through these lenses, he's giving more focus to that. And I think that that's part of the double bind, is feeling like you have to. You have to speak through that more often. But what I'm looking for that doesn't exist in Pete is the ability, the capacity to take that lens that he has as a cis man, to take that lens that he has as a white cis man, and to put the language he experiences of marginalization into the language that they will understand. And he has the ability to do that pass through, and he does not utilize it. And that, to me, is alarming, because that means that when he's putting that focus in that lens, that's where his focus really is.
And I feel like that, to me, speaks to why, like, you want a candidate who might come from an untraditional, maybe not the traditional routes, they at least then have to have a vision that's big and different and shifts the conversation. And I feel like of all the candidates, like, he hasn't inspired me in that way. He hasn't said something that makes me go, oh my God, he's saying things that aren't being said, like actually Castro does. Like, when you talk about who in the primary, one thing that I thought was interesting about Bernie was in the last election was how his perspective shifted the conversation in the general Democratic conversation. So the terms weren't being so set by the Republicans all the time, right? Yeah. And you're seeing that a lot in a very exciting way in this primary, because of certain candidates who are like, I'm going to shift the conversation over here. I'm going to stand up for this. And everybody kind of follows them. I feel like Liz Warren does that. I feel like to some extent Bernie does that. I definitely feel like Julian Castro does that. Like,
I mean, reparations.
So many layers of it. There are even moments where, you know, I have mixed feelings about Cory Booker, but he has, similar to Pete, that very, I mean, the sort of Rhodes Scholar, I have been chosen privilege. It's like that Ivy League, I have been chosen shiny young thing that so many, like, I went to Yale, I remember those kids. They felt like they were chosen for this privilege. All of these institutions of privilege were set up to normalize white supremacist privilege. They were set up to normalize the privilege that was only inherited through wealth and whiteness and power. They aren't there to actually be meritocratic institutions. They're not.
No.
So a lot of the people, but they set up this thing where then the people who go through them feel like they've earned it and they deserve it. And you see that kind of young shininess, even in Castro, frankly. But
yes, Stanford.
Yeah. But there's this way that he's not pushing the debate in a way that's expanding the conversation the way that some of these other young shinies have been, even the young shinies. And I'm suspicious of Mr. Stanford and Mr. Yale, and like I there's much suspicion there, and I'm not like, I don't fall for it because I've been with those people. Like,
I think it's very interesting to see who thinks about those places as places to gain credibility and credentials. Going to back to believability, right? Cred, credulous, all comes from the root to believe. And when we talk about credibility and we talk about credentials, what we're saying is those people pass through those spaces just so that way they can get a ticket punched, because they won't be able to get to their next destination without it. So I think, like, you take someone like Michelle Obama, or in fact the Obamas together, you think, well, did Barack Obama think they was chosen? Well, like, of course, he's a megalomaniac, as is everyone who runs for president of the United States. But when
you have to be,
you have to be. Like, imagine looking at this trash fire that is a nation and being like, I should fix this.
Yeah, being like, you know what, guys? Me.
I'm going to go and I'm going to argue with people. I'm going to tell them to pay me money so that way I can argue with other people, tell them that I should be president. Like, that's the most insane thing ever, really, when you get to it. But like, at the same time, when he made his, he clearly planned to be president of the United States. He planned it at a relatively early age. And you can see how it was like, okay, well, I'm not going to make it if I have this credential. I need a better credential. I need this thing to pass through this door. Mm-hmm. Now, it might give me important experiences, and I should record what I'm experiencing in these places. You know, I went to Groton, and I went to Georgetown, and I was in very, very super privileged bubbles. And in those spaces, you have to still absorb what you're learning. And there are people who clearly have absorbed what they learned, but not from their teachers, from the experience of being in their places. And said, I've earned this credential, now I can move forward, because people are no longer going to question my intelligence. And if you are someone who's a marginalized identity, the most important thing you can do is forestall that questioning. You toss out, like, I went to this fancy school. People just stop then questioning whether or not you're competent. You know, they want to. Barack Obama got a lot of affirmative action jokes, but it was very hard for people to say that guy's not educated. Like, he was, he could show that he'd hit the dots, as it were. He could hit his marks. He could hit his targets. So
checked his boxes. Yeah,
exactly. He checked his boxes. Pete Buttigieg is the product of those environments. He is not someone who passed through them. He was created by them. He grew up in Notre Dame. He went to Harvard. He was a Rhodes Scholar. This is not the path of someone who is from the outside of these spaces. He is a product of these spaces. He was trained for this. He believes it's his natural extension.
A lot of ways that he talks about gayness is very much about, like, I stayed in the closet because this was going to fuck with my, what I deserved, what I was born to do. Like, this
has he said things like that,
this was going to get framing? In the way of my career. Yeah.
But what I was meant for, what I was born to do, or what career? Those are two different things.
I read it as what he was meant for and what he was born to do. That's how a lot of it comes across to me, is that, like, and again, this is part of my own history, where it's like, I went to school and I knew these people who stayed in the closet for those reasons. I recognize that. And I think it's true. It's like, he didn't need the stamp so that he could have the legitimacy. He is a product of those institutions. And so it's almost like having to be out and queer was almost like forced on him.
I mean, that's a bit harsh, but I do think there's this, to me, it just seems so obvious that his privileged cis male whiteness and his moderate middle of the road positioning and his youth and, you know, good television presence, they all are things that people want. And this is going to sound terrible, but his gayness gives people cover to want those other things.
Yes. Yes. That is not, I don't think that's a terrible thing to say. I think that's not about whether or not he himself is doing it, because it's part of his identity. So I would, you know, he lives through it. He experiences it. You know, he's in that space. So it's not a reflection on him, but it is a reflection on what he chooses to sell people.
Yeah.
And that is something that he is saying, I can give you, you know, they're saying we need to be different. But how different do we need to be? You know, right. I can give you all of the things that we've always had, but I also let you know that I'm fresh and different. Not like the old ways. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it gives this kind of, and he's clearly planning on that buoying him to the nomination. That is his entire messaging path forward. It's like, do you like change, but not really?
and actually, the thing that's very hard about that is that we've been having this thing we call Double Standard Watch 2020, which is a horrible title, but we can't think of a more clear one, and it says what it is. Like Elizabeth Warren spent 20 years doing a little extra work for private money for like 20 years worth, it adds up to $2 million. And people are like, she's lying, because women are inherently untrustworthy. Pete Buttigieg lies about all of these people endorsing his plan, and then lies about all the, and when Elizabeth Warren was called on it, she's like, here are all 20 years of all of my clients and exactly how much money I made from them in a spreadsheet. Ta-da, right? But women are inherently untrustworthy. Buttigieg lies about these massive bundlers who have been giving him money. He doesn't even include it. He lies about these endorsements, and nobody's like, he's a liar, because he's a nice-looking young man. And it's like,
I mean,
it's crazy-making. Like, it's he's making
also,
me crazy.
He's also not threatening, though. And that works. That's not threatening on two levels. Number one, he's not threatening on the level of being white and male and straight sort of presenting. So he, you know, he doesn't feel as scary as the lady who wants to take your money away. But also his poll numbers and the generally accepted consensus that he's not actually winning this nomination make him less of a target for people to call him a liar and so forth. If he were the front runner, you might see a different story. Sure. But I would speculate it wouldn't be quite the same as the way Warren gets treated in terms of questioning her honesty and integrity and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think people are more hands off right now in the Democratic primary, even though we're talking about it, and I think our circles are talking about it. I don't think it's a broader national conversation right now that people are having about politics. People are trying to avoid conversations about politics where they can, which you know, means that things don't get discussed properly, but that's neither here nor there. But that means that Pete Buttigieg just doesn't, it's just not going to rise to news. Like, what is very newsworthy about that? And then even more, it really fits in with his whole persona that he's building now. So, you know, the argument he's making is not that he's not corrupt. And everyone, again, is not taking any gloves off. Elizabeth Warren... Elizabeth Warren has to make that argument, which is that you have been corrupted. You were corrupted from the start, and your motives are corrupt, because someone who would work with McKinsey after finding out what they do, you know, what they have done, not to think of a defense for your work with them is kind of baffling to me. His friendship with Mark Zuckerberg, like, dude, I don't know how close you are with Mark Zuckerberg or whatever, but like on a personal level. But his company is responsible for a genocide. So maybe you should think about that. Like, fundamentally, that genocide was facilitated by Facebook. And that cannot be denied. And the fact that Pete Buttigieg is still hanging out with someone after that because of the amount of influence he wields is alarming to me. And it suggests a certain level of immorality that I would not want in my president.
Oh, but he's so cute.
Argument.
But he's so cute. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, that's where it's at right now. It's crazy. It's crazy.
No, but I think what it comes down to here is that Pete Buttigieg fucking up is not a news story, because he's at best 5% in some Iowa polls. Pete Buttigieg doing something good, like accomplishing something, is a news story. This nobody did this thing that people noticed is a story. The reverse is not. He's just still a nobody.
But it's also like one of my favorite movies of all time is Primary Colors. It's it's so much better than the book. And it's and Emma Thompson as Hillary. Like, I felt like we didn't get enough time with that movie when she was running for president. And it's my favorite Mike Nichols movie, actually. But there's this moment where the new candidate at the end, the one who's played by Larry Hagman, comes in, and everything he says just seems so real, and he's so wonderful. And because he's not the front runner, people are just like, oh, this guy is so much integrity. And then he's up in front, and the character played by Billy Bob Thornton, who's supposed to be, what's his name? Louisiana dude. Like, in, he's supposed to be like the equivalent of, what's his name, the Democratic
I know who you're talking about, and he's a strategist.
Yeah,
and
the Democrat.
He said it's the economy, stupid.
Carville,
right?
Exactly. So he's like playing the Carville character, and he's like, "Oh, he's the man now. They're gonna go after him now." He's like, "The media giveth, and go fuck yourself." Like, it's true. It's true. Right now, we are in the stage of Buttigieg being the media giveth, but go fuck yourself is not coming along quickly enough for me.
For your taste,
no.
Yes.
No, it is
frankly,
not.
The timing on all of this, who got dismissed early and who became a serious contender, was entirely orchestrated, again, by newsrooms that are still disproportionately white, disproportionately male, and not having the filter at this point, like not being able to recognize your own blind spots after what happened. You should be all of them should be taken out and be like, anytime a white man files a Buttigieg story, ask yourself whether or not any of this needs to be said by him. Like, what about explaining why Pete Buttigieg has such low numbers among the black community? Why not explain, like, why he can't seem to get beyond Iowa right now? And he's pouring tons into Iowa, and the entire bet that all the people who are giving him money is making is that basically he'll get high enough in Iowa and New Hampshire to survive somehow through South Carolina. Not really sure how he's surviving South Carolina and Nevada, but there's no rationale whatsoever. The basic thing is, well, once I successfully win over white people, black people will then realize that I should be their candidate. Right. And that's their rationale with Joe right now. If I can take Joe's spot, then we'll get this. And it's like, first of all, no one can occupy Joe Biden's spot. You know, he's died in it, so he's there. he's in that spot, you guys. He's never leaving.
Not going anywhere.
But, like, he's in that slot, and so you can't dislodge him. You can only come up with alternate strategies.
Before we continue, I'm realizing now that we did not discuss what we're drinking. So I just want to take a quick moment.
Yes.
I'll start. I am drinking an herbal tea with rum, which is very nice. It's snowing in New York, like it's winter or something. So it's nice. Nice and warm and cozy. What are you ladies drinking?
I'm drinking hot cider with rum in it, basically. Same.
Oh, very nice.
It's New York. It's cold.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in California, so I thought it would be very pretentious to drink a hot toddy, even though I wanted to. So I'm drinking a Dark and Stormy in honor of your current snow squall with extra lime in it. But I am drinking hot tea back, as you know, I love. Like, I have my little hot
tea.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Look at us with our hot beverages. We're just a
trio of very cozy
hot beverage ladies.
So I have my question about Pete, because I feel like we're very clear on why we don't need to talk about him and why are we. But my question is, like, who's to blame? What are the templates that provided for this guy being taken seriously for even 30 seconds? And I feel like it's a little bit of Obama. It's a little bit of early Bill Clinton. It's a little bit of Sarah Palin. Is it Trump? Like, who allowed, like, how is this happening? Like, who provided the template for this in terms of a public performance of the brilliant outsider who's going to somehow swan in and, like, what is this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have to acknowledge that Obama absolutely set a precedent here for this type of performance.
Yeah, everyone's trying. That's the template everyone's trying to go with in their own way. You know, Cory Booker's trying it, Kamala Harris tried it, Julian Castro is trying it, Kirsten Gillibrand kind of tried it, but didn't, you know, like, a lot of people are trying to capture that Obama energy because they felt like, okay, well, the successor was Hillary energy, and that was mostly a defensive crouch with occasional lobs out of the phalanx. You know, like, you're just like, lock down. You know? And instead, like, you know, they want that big crowd energy, the happiness, the joy, the sense of change, the sense of momentum.
But also the sense of like luminous intelligence. Look at my luminous intelligence that like lights up the room. And I have to say, Obama to me was a very rare candidate. And Bill Clinton had this too, where like the luminous quality of their intelligence was their charisma. And I feel like those other people are trying it, but I don't think that's where their charisma is.
Nope.
Their charisma is in other places. I'm not saying they don't have charisma, but I feel like that's a real lightning in a bottle thing. And it's kind of,
Go ahead, Rebecca.
I was just going to say that I also think charisma is just such a huge element for Buttigieg. And I think he knows it, that what he's riding on is image and performance and his ability to do that. And but there's also an extent to which Obama offered this, like, I have some experience in politics, but like he was a freshman senator he didn't even finish his first term. He had experience, but like he was inexperienced enough that was one of the main attacks that both Hillary and the GOP used. It was like, this guy is so young and fresh and doesn't know what the hell he's doing. But I think his being able to pull that off, that balance between I'm so smart, I have the intellectual pedigree, I have the charisma, and I am new. I don't have the baggage. I can bring change. He balanced that so perfectly. So I do think you wouldn't have a Buttigieg if you hadn't had Obama.
Because what Obama said is that these other talents that I have are a bridge over the gaps of my experience.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's well said.
Yes.
And I feel like what the reason that I ended up voting for him in the primary is actually because Michelle Obama, actually, in a speech at UCLA, made an argument for the legitimacy of his experience that I was like, oh, wow, like, I think she's right. Because she talked about the ways that his experience in the state Senate, his experience as a community organizer, she spoke about the ways that those were just as legitimate as experience as all these other things. And I completely believed that. I don't know that anybody can do that for Pete Buttigieg. That's what I want to say.
No, just to hop in, because I had this thought about something that most people cannot say because it's a lightning rod word. And Barack Obama was particularly good at articulating a vision, articulating how he fit within that vision, articulating what made him special about that vision. And that was a big thing for people. You know, they wanted to see the country the way he saw the country. He was so good at expressing the country that way.
Well, people because really he wanted could to say
it was real.
Because he could say, right. I am, so this is.
Exactly. Right. Like,
that was big. I exist, this is the potential for what this country can be.
Exactly. And that was a very powerful message that I think people really underestimate. And I think I've said this on Twitter, but like one of the things that really makes me angry is how much this entire field, even Elizabeth Warren, has underestimated the political skills of their predecessors. You know, Bill Clinton has his own particular weird thing, which we're not going to get into. His charisma is outrageous. It's painful in person. I have to say, it's impossible not to be magnet. Like, he's a magnet. But then you have Barack Obama, the skill it takes to become the first Black president of the United States, just massively underrated from all the people who decided, yeah, I could probably capture some of that. Do you have any idea how crazy that was? Do you have any idea how completely insane it is to run as a freshman senator? If he hadn't gotten the idea put in his head, and if we hadn't had the idea put in our heads by 2004's convention speech, that would never have happened. His convention speech is the entire reason he was able to become president of the United States. And no one's ever going to convince me otherwise.
That is, I was literally thinking of the same thing, because we had friends who my husband went to law school with who were working for him in Chicago. And they were like, you have to watch the speech at the convention. So I was at a bar with Ben, and we watched the convention speech in 2004 when Carrie was running. I will never forget it. Ben and I were just starting to date. We watched, and we were like, he's going to be our next president.
He's
like,
going to be president.
In that moment, we were like,
they all said that.
That's everything. It. No one even cared about John Kerry anymore. We were like, when can that guy run?
Yes.
Is he allowed to run right now?
Yes.
Right now.
It was absolutely phenomenal.
That the Democratic Party have been looking for. Someone has to agree to embody the energy that the Democratic Party is looking for. Pete Buttigieg is so far from that energy. It is bizarre. Mm. It's like Arctic. Like, if that energy is the equator, that's where he is. He is at the Arctic of that. He is absolutely zero of the charisma that I think about when I think, can we change this situation? You know? And then Hillary Clinton had a completely different thing. She somehow was so hyper-competent and so capable and so warm in personal and intimate settings that she was capable of overriding the massive shitstorm that got thrown at her for years.
Decades.
Like nobody could survive that kind of investigation of their life like Hillary Clinton survived and still be a viable presidential candidate. We have just gotten like Pete Buttigieg's like list of donors. You think that if he had made speeches at Goldman Sachs, that man would have an argument or a defense for it? She donated all the money, by the way. Like the fact that she released her tax returns, and that's why we know about Goldman. Like there is so much that we know about her, and we take that for granted. And the level of transparency that we got from her and still could become a viable presidential candidate is a spectacular kind of skill. And nobody has that either. I would say Elizabeth Warren's really close because she's so ideologically consistent.
Elizabeth Warren has the ideological consistency, and she has that kind of the hyper competence of Hillary without the baggage of 20 years of Republicans making her Lady Macbeth. Like,
that is true.
And she also has a quality that, dare I say it, is more likable. She's I always liked Hillary, but I appreciate that for everything everyone says about her being great in small groups and intimate settings, she's never really been able to talk to a large crowd in a way that felt moving. I think Elizabeth Warren can do that. And I think she can connect with people, not just one-on-one, but she can kind of connect with people in groups and across TV in a way that maybe Hillary wasn't as good.
Well, I think Hillary, at a certain point, you could see the fear, because I remember her so much when Bill was first running, and she had that kind of like, fuck y'all, I am brilliant, and you don't get to shut me up.
Right,
and you could see how over the years, how she was deformed by what was done to her in her ability to be public and sort of charismatic and exciting. She got so cautious, and that was a Gore problem too. It's like the caution and fear is
the vulnerability.
Yeah. As opposed to showing the vulnerability. Afraid. Yeah. But I feel like, again, like, yeah, it's interesting how the sort of long-term impact of, Obama in having this be possible, and actually in a lot of the young candidates running. I think you're right that all of the younger candidates who are running are trying to like be that guy again. So I think the last thing I'd like to just check in was, this was something that you brought up, and we've covered this, but in a more succinct way, why Pete is not a solution. And one of the things that we noticed is that there are people for whom, like, one of the things that we've talked about with Biden that's so frustrating is that Biden keeps being like, Trump is an aberration, Trump is an aberration. And I think that a lot of us see Trump as the logical extension of where we've been going for a long time. And as terrible as his election was, it cracked open the space for a conversation about these deeper systemic problems when we've been sitting there playing defense for fucking 40 years.
Yeah.
And of all of the candidates running, apart from the Russian asset, Buttigieg doesn't seem to have any kind of handle on those bigger problems. And so how can he be somebody who's going to help us out of this mess?
Yeah. I think it flows back to what we were talking about before with the energy that Obama encapsulated about what we wanted to be as a country. And the fact that now we're in this particular space and people judge not only doesn't have that energy right now, he doesn't even seem to be aspiring towards that energy. There's no vision of where we're going to be heading. What a Buttigieg, presidency means. Does that mean that we stop having hate crimes? Like, it doesn't seem like you care enough about that to make that a priority. Does that mean, like, or I guess, like, we'll end whatever's happening at the border, but are you going to be talking about restitution for all the things that we just did? We just did them. This is the time, if you're going to do restitution, to fix the problem. You can fix it right now, but are you committed to doing that kind of work? Are you committed to the kind of backlash it will create? Do you even know that you're going to create a backlash by trying to solve these problems? Because people elected Trump, the people who did vote for Trump, let's put it that way, do not want these problems solved. Right. They deliberately do not want this to happen. So if you want to appeal to them, if you want to win them over, you have to agree not to solve these problems. And that's the energy that Pete Buttigieg has, which is that he's going to bring everybody into a room. He's going to give them some consultant points. He's going to make everything the most efficient. And in the end, he's going to throw human lives out to create a top line solution for the people who are going to be left. And like that bothers me in the presidency of the United States.
Yep.
There you go.
And that's the last word on Pete Buttigieg. And I really hope it can be the last word that anybody has to say about him. Like, go be mayor. Like, go do something. I don't know. Volunteer. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, go work with kids.
There's
like,
so much stuff he can do. You know, the Legal Defense Fund was a thing that Hillary did at around that age, you know? Find something to do with yourself.
I know. Like, all of the amazing, like, right now, there are all of these people who, I mean, they're becoming public figures to me because I'm married to a lawyer, so they're like celebrities in our house. But there are all of those people who are organizing impact litigation for the NAACP LDF and for the ACLU, who are doing like national impact litigation, and you see them on the news and they're like running these like major projects, and you're like, you're like, that's the shit, man. Like,
it's the age of Trump. What are you doing? And for Pete Buttigieg, that is running for president so that way I can create a national profile for myself so I can
run for president.
Something. We don't know what Pete Buttigieg wants out of this whole situation. Become vice president? No way, man. No way.
I don't know. Maybe he does want to run for a state office or something. Senate? I don't know.
But I mean, as I said, his biggest problem is the one that he's identified as being the problem of Black voters exclusively. Which, you know, that Indiana is a very Black state, so that's what's holding him back. You know, Black people's homophobia.
Well, Caitlin, it is a joy every time having you on.
Thank you so much for joining us. As always, that was so amazing. I love having Caitlin on. Listeners, we'd love to hear your thoughts as well. So don't forget to reach out and tell us what you thought, what we left out, where we were wrong. I mean, obviously we weren't wrong, but whatever, you know.
Right.
Whatever your thoughts are. You can reach us via email. We are saucepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on all the social media platforms as @saucepodcast. And of course, if you want to chat with us on Discord, we have a Discord server called the Sauce Speakeasy, which is, it's just like a kind of a chat message board forum thing. In order to join that, you have to become a member of our Patreon. So go patreon.com/saucepodcast, and you can see the different membership levels and stuff like that. We'd love you to join and become part of that conversation on the Discord as well.
And we also, if you were looking just to talk to me, just me, then you can reach me at Maya Garance anywhere you are looking for Maya Garances.
And you can find out what art Maya's doing and
it's
what
true.
whatever other artsy fartsy stuff she's up to.
Oh, you're so dismissive. Also, I'm open to taking recommendations for Charlotte, North Carolina, because right now it's looking pretty grim. I mean, apparently that's going to be good for my productivity, but come help me, people. Help me out.
Help her find the best cocktail bars in Charlotte.
Oh, God bless you. Yes.
And you can reach me. I am at GynoStar on any platform you might happen to be on. Reach out.
And we will see you soon.